Kia ora, talofa, namaste, haere mai, and welcome to this week's episode of The Niche Cast. We're from the Niche Cash, theniche-cash.com, where we deliver major, big, hefty, hearty Aotearoa sporting content in honour of Aotearoa. We love Aotearoa and we love Aotearoa sport, and that's what we're here to do today. Well, just to swing a leg, swing an arm, a little bit of a yoga pose to get the blood moving. We were talking about Avondale Bowling Club in the variety show musical jam segment, and then Tom Scott uploaded a interview thingamajig little cooking show with Troy Kingy. So I'm not sure if you've seen that, or if you haven't seen it, I'd recommend it to you.
Yeah, I saw that you'd shared it, and I hadn't had a chance to have a peek at it yet. So I did sort of like leave that one open. Let's return to this tab later on and see how it goes. So I look forward to that.
How many tabs you got open right now?
Well, because we're recording, I've shut my Brave window. I only have the Chrome window open. So probably about 6 or 7. Otherwise, it would be 20-odd, I would say, probably.
You're on a diet.
Yeah. So it's just my computer's CPU is on a diet. Can't feed too much junk food before podcast recording.
It's on... intermittent fasting, no breakfast this morning, just steaming ahead. The reason I like, obviously we enjoy a bit of Troy Kingy and we enjoy a bit of Avondale Bowling Club as well, probably elite Aotearoa music. Like, if we're dealing in elite Aotearoa athletes and sporting figures, you know, the Stephen Adams, the Chris Wood, the Kane Williamson, the James Fisher Harris type of characters, Tom Scott, Troy Kingy, the Beths,
Marlon Williams,
Aldis Harding,
recent album,
Marlon Williams. So it's good to see. What are your, how do you feel about that? Just two major forces of Aotearoa music, Tom Scott, Troy Kingy. You haven't watched the interview, but as far as like musical connection goes, any thoughts that come to mind there?
Well, I saw it said that they're almost exactly the same age, or something along those lines. Like in the description,
was,
they were born a day apart or something.
Yeah, same year, a day apart. Apparently Troy Kingy's from the Bay of Islands, and then obviously Tom Scott from Avondale. So
yeah, Troy Kingy lives in Kirikiri, from what I understand. I went and watched a concert of his with Delaney Davison a couple, like a year or two ago, when he was you know, touring on the last album, and the front row was all like people that looked like him, and people that clearly knew him because they were talking about him just as Troy and stuff before the thing started. Like, it's obviously just his whole family, you know, got all the front rows, got all the good seats, as you would. Like, it's a homecoming show. That's how you do it.
I wonder if Troy Kingy is related to Kyson Kingy, who I mentioned as part of the Penrith Panthers Kiwi NRL breakdown. Kyson Kingy is also from Kirikiri. So I'm curious. Maybe there's a little whānau link there. Big up to the Patreon whānau, patreon.com/ELNicheCash. Our Niche Cash, it is the best way to support the Niche Cash and all of our content every week. We deliver an extra podcast to the Patreon whānau, and we try and encourage a bit of kōrero on the Patreon page, because we're more likely to respond to Patreon folks than the random Facebook comments or whatever else. So big up to the Patreon whānau. Thank you very much for your support. And if you are generous enough to want to support the Niche Cash and our content directly, join the Patreon whānau, patreon.com/ELNicheCash, ELNicheCash. And tomorrow's Friday, which means our email newsletter dispatch will be sent out Friday evening, featuring all sorts of Aotearoa sporting content, all the links to the website, all the links to the podcast, as well as extra yarn. Extra paragraphs, extra, I'm not sure what you'd call, like, a, is it a digit, like a single thing on the screen? Extra digits coming at you about Aotearoa sport. We cover everything, a little bit of everything except for the old rugby union. So if you do love Aotearoa sport and you do want a Aotearoa sporting musings sent straight to you on a Monday and Friday evening, sign up to our email newsletter via Substack, thenichecash.substack.com. Wildcard, we start our podcast with a dose of mindfulness. What do you have today?
Yeah, I got, I'm not sure if I've used this book before, but Shunryu Suzuki's Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind is a relatively recent pickup. And fella says in a random page where I flicked through and found a quote that sounded good enough to use, and this is a good one too, it says, "When you become you, Zen becomes Zen. When you are you, you see things as they are, and you become one with your surroundings." When you are you, Zen becomes Zen.
I do feel like the Zen path is exactly that. Like, if you embark on the Zen path or the mindfulness path, you are literally just trying to connect with yourself and your soul. And that's the journey. Is like, it's not easy. It's not hard. There's actually another mindfulness I've heard where depression is just a mutiny of the soul. So your soul is staging a mutiny, and that is manifested as depression. And that just makes depression all good. Like, if you're depressed, it's all good. Like, you just need to pay it, listen, because that's your soul telling you whatever the fuck you're doing right now is wrong to your soul's perspective. And that is the mutiny of your soul, because your soul wants to connect with its own divine energy. And I think for a lot of people, that is the journey of mindfulness and the journey of Zen and journey of some of these ideas, is just becoming yourself. And to become yourself, you need to listen to your soul. And then it's like that part of that cycle where you need to connect with your soul, understand that maybe your soul is unhappy, is staging a mutiny, and then you embark on the path and you just become your true self.
Yeah, I do think that's often the case with a lot of mental illness, like not just depression but anxiety and things like this. Like, it's I mean, obviously not all the time, but I do think often it is a case of you know, there's like certain fundamental things that your soul requires in order to feel fulfilled and content. And, you know, things like community, like relationships with other people, feeling a part of something bigger than yourself. A lot of anxiety and depression comes from a feeling of isolation. I also think just one thing that's really, I don't know, limited in today's society is just a creative output or outlet, rather, where, I mean, for a lot of the people we're going to be talking about on this podcast today, their creative output or outlet is their sport. But then you also get times where if that suddenly doesn't feel the case, then you will lose passion for that sport. And you need other things. Like, it's and just the way that society works these days, it's like you need something, you just go to the shop and get it. And most of the time, the thing that you need to go and get was like produced in a factory or something by a machine. You don't have the same, like, can you imagine in the old days where it's like, if your shirt rips, you have to stitch it up yourself. You know, just simple things like that. Or you can't go down to the grocery store and get fresh vegetables because we're not at an age yet where refrigeration allows you to keep vegetables fresh for long enough for like a shipping process to occur. So you got to grow them yourself if you want that. Like, that's a creative output too, or outlet. Things like that, where it's like a lot of that's been stripped away. And I think that is something that a lot of people, I don't know, struggle with. It's definitely something that I like look for ways to be creative just in my own life, just to like stave off that kind of thing. But not just to stave off, but also because it gives you the opposite effect. When you do it, you feel better. Like, you feel worse when you don't do it. You don't just get back to even, back to zero when you do. It's like you go above that, which in a way is kind of the opposite of that. You be you, Zen be Zen. Like, it's a different idea, but just on that,
yeah,
like,
you went down a whole different path there.
Like,
you...
I did. But also a valuable path. But just the UVU Zen becomes Zen thing, the one thing I wanted to add to that is just like a lot of the times with, I don't know, when you're trying to accomplish anything, it sort of is presented as like the hero's journey type thing, where you might end up where you started, but you are changed in some way. Like, you've got to go on this quest, you've got to add these like skills, upskill constantly, and just continually improve with all these little accomplishments in order to achieve the end goal. With Zen mindset, it sort of feels like the opposite. You don't want to add things on. You're not trying to like add skill sets, you know, feathers in your cap and strings to your bow or whatever. You actually kind of want to strip all that away and just get back to like the core essence, which seems to be the point. And you just, you be you. That's what that is, isn't it? It's like, be the natural self that you were born to be. Like, don't fight against that and try to be something else that others are telling you to be, or that you feel yourself that you should be. Like, just play the hand you're given, you know, like roll with it. And then you'll find it a lot easier to be at one with nature when you are at one with your own nature to begin with. Because obviously if you're not that, it's going to be pretty hard to be at one with all nature. But if you're at one with your own nature, you realize your own nature is kind of the same as all nature. And suddenly there's nothing else to... I guess that's also an othering thing, isn't it? When people bring themselves separate to nature, and that causes issues. But that's one tangent's enough for this mindfulness, I think.
Yeah, I think we need to stick... Mindfulness needs to be about one idea. And we literally...
you threw the second one out there, I was just saying.
I would suggest...
It was a good one, though.
That the... I would suggest the hero's journey is exactly the process you laid out. There's no difference between a hero's journey and a Zen journey. The hero's journey takes you on the journey to strip everything away.
Yeah, because those cycles, you do end up back where you started. And you sort of realize, oh, I had the power all along, kind of thing.
Aotearoa sporting matters may commence right now. There is the Rugby League World Cup popping up on the radar wildcard, and I would like to say that these are absolutely bonkers sporting times. So much shit is happening. Better organization. That's why this maybe the mindfulness is just to stick to one idea at a time, because we've got 50 million sporting ideas running through our heads at the moment, and we're fizzed up to do the podcast. So we do love to spin a yarn. But it's also very chaotic times for the Aotearoa sporting beat. One of those things is the Rugby League World Cup. Obviously, we've got blokes and wahine World Cups going on. And the Kiwis have named a team to play against Leeds, which is a pretty cool concept where not all the Kiwis players are going to play. But Thomas Luluai, one of Papatoa's finest, he is named a halfback for a swan song appearance for the Kiwis, and they will play Leeds. There's a couple different wrinkles to some of the rugby league stuff that I've been pondering wildcard, where every like World Cup or Kiwis international thing is just there's a bunch of randoms who want to play for Aotearoa. And I've seen this like Sebastian Chris. He's basically saying he doesn't want to play Origin. Because he's born and raised in Queensland, I believe. Yeah, sure. And there's this other thing where, like, here I go myself, offering 50 million ideas based off the one idea. There is this thing where, like, if you are Māori, you're a Kiwi. I think there's a lot of Māoris in Australia who are born and raised in Australia, and they can represent Aotearoa Rugby League through the Māori All-Stars. So that makes us... It's an interesting one with someone like Chris, because he's born and raised in Australia. There is that Māori All-Stars representative route to like connect you with your whānau. But he wants to play for the Kiwis, which I think is fantastic. And then in the Kiwi Ferns, you got some players who have like... One player has represented the Australian PMs 13. Another one's played Queensland Under-19s this year. And then the other one's played for Australia, like, rugby. And I think if you combine Racine McGregor, Paige McGregor, and then might have been Shanice Parker, they've all played rugby union for Australia. Or, like, sevens rugby for Australia. Now they're playing for the Kiwi Ferns. It's quite interesting because everyone wants to throw out these names, but at the end of the day, we have no idea who actually wants to represent Aotearoa. And who doesn't? It's a very weird one. But yeah, any ideas based off that? Just the different players popping up all over the show to represent Aotearoa, or you've got players born and raised in New Zealand, and just because they're born in New Zealand, like someone like Spencer Lenu, born in New Zealand, but basically was raised in Australia. But you see a lot of people saying, you know, born in New Zealand, then you're a Kiwi. Well, a lot of these, especially Polynesians and Māoris, like, they're born in New Zealand, but everything about their life is Australian. But they're Samoan Tongan. So it's just been interesting to watch some of that wash up with how people view these players. What is a Kiwi? You know, who wants to play for Aotearoa Kiwis? Who doesn't want to play for Aotearoa Kiwis? Because you've had like Murray Taulangi, Cowboys winger, born and raised in Auckland, played, you know, left Auckland 12, 13 years old. Now he's playing for Australia. It's a very strange situation, but all of that is to say that you can only really judge it on what the player's actions are, as opposed to, oh, this player's going to do this, this player's going to do that. No, every player has their own vibe.
Yeah, it kind of ultimately, because there's such close connections between the ANZAC countries in general. Like, it's just, there's a lot of immigration both ways. There's a lot of, you know, just shared cultural type things. It's not a big shift if you go and live in Australia. It's compared to living in, you know, Aotearoa. It's not a crazy difference. So like moving to, I don't know. For some reason, I'm thinking of Stefan Marinovic living in Israel these days, or having played in Germany, or, you know, countries like that. It's not that big of a shift. And so just you get lots of, I don't know, you just get a lot of players in a lot of sports who are eligible for both, and they might have strong connection, like, despite, I don't know, a lifetime of propaganda about like Farlap and Pavlova and Finn Brothers and Russell Crowe and things like that. Who owns who? It's like, well, actually, a lot of these
most
things,
most of the younger generation have no idea what those things are.
Right? Yeah, like, there's that for starters.
We barely have any like clue what those things are.
And also, Farlap's a horse. Like, I don't think horses have citizenship. Like, probably longer than that. Like, when's the last time a horse had to get like a passport or something? I'm sure there's some kind of like customs things you got to go through. But I'm pretty sure a horse going through customs would be more like, you know, a parcel going through, like, or baggage. You know, I don't think it's treated like a human. So that's weird to begin with. But just, it's not like people can have links to both countries and be completely emotionally invested in both sides, in which case it's just like, which do you prefer? And for some people, it's like, I'm not going to make the Origin squad, so I'll try, and if I don't make Origin, I won't play for Australia, so I could play for New Zealand, because it's a better career opportunity. For other people, it's an emotional thing, and it's based on, you know, family and deeper connections and maybe childhood aspects and whatever. There's no right or wrong. And even just like in the football scene in recent times, there's been a lot of this, like, just the stuff I've been covering. You think of Gianni Stensner's move to the Phoenix because he had a Kiwi parent, committed to New Zealand, played under 20s, then got quite good, committed back to Australia, which is where he felt at home. But like, he moved for a career opportunity, went back for an emotional thing. You look at like Ali Green and India Paige Riley with different situations in terms of like, Ali Green grew up entirely in Australia, but as a Kiwi mother. Indy Riley moved to Australia as a teenager, sort of 12, 13 age, but has completely Kiwi family. Still, most of them live in Auckland, kind of thing. Both switched back to play for the Football Ferns recently, like within the last year. And even just like, because, you know, the Wellington Phoenix Wahine team have this trick thing with, you got to have at least 5 Australians in the thing. Well, one of the Australians they've registered this year is Michaela Robertson, who's born and bred Wellingtonian, one Australian parent. Therefore, she got an Australian passport to play for the Phoenix, and now she's playing as an Australian player. Completely, like, she hasn't played for the Football Ferns, but she's been called up to squads before. I think she was in the wider Olympic squad relatively recently. Like, gaming the system a little bit, but also, of course, you're going to do that if you're the Wellington Phoenix. But just the point being, like, there's a lot of reasons why players would go back and forth. And ultimately, it's just like, if you have the choice, you just make a choice. Like, sometimes it's a career thing. Sometimes it's an emotional thing. Sometimes it's just like, I want to play with the lads, you know? someone like, who'd you say, Sebastian Chris, like playing Māori All-Stars. Imagine there will be a lot of proud like Kiwi representatives in that team. Not everyone has to be like Kalen Ponga played that, didn't he? Situations like that, although Kalen Ponga does say he wants to play for the All Blacks if he ever plays Union, but that's a whole other can of worms. But also probably had a couple other guys in his ear being like, well, you know, World Cup, end of the year, what do you reckon, sort of thing. Like, there might just be something like that. Because I think that's what we've seen with the Samoa squad recently, is just like all those Panthers dudes are playing for Samoa. It's like, you know, they're copping a lot of flack at the moment, the Panthers, for some of their celebration things. I kind of love it. I love the friskiness and the whatever, bit of rivalry and whatnot. But those guys clearly love playing with each other. And a lot of them are going to go and play at the World Cup with each other. You know, it's just continuation of that kind of thing. It's just like, let's play with the lads. There's lots of reasons why players go back and forth. And it's just one of those, like, play it as it lays. As a fan, sit, like, at a distance from that, just, you know, take it as it comes. Some players will commit, some players won't commit. You're going to have ones that get away, and you're also going to get some ones that you scoop up that you never expected. So you just kind of got to see who turns up on the day when squads are named, you know.
For all that Panthers, Samoan, I don't know what the Samoan equivalent of mana is, but for all of that, Moses Leota is playing for Aotearoa.
True.
So it's like, there's no rhyme or reason with any of this shit. I actually thought the Māori All-Stars would take some players away from Aotearoa Kiwis, because that is their route to connect with their Māori heritage. Like, Kalen Ponga never has to represent Aotearoa to represent his, like, Māori lineage on a footy field, because he can play Māori All-Stars every single year. So it's, I actually thought that was going to happen, but it's seems to be a bit of both. Whereas the woman, right now it seems like you can play Origin and Kiwi Ferns, which it's a bit of a weird situation in the women's rugby league, because it's like players are pulling out because they have to work.
Yeah, I saw that.
So
yeah,
it's like, we're very far off from any semblance of equality there. But I'm just swinging back to the Kiwis team to play Leeds. So this is happening this weekend. This game will be streamed on YouTube, so you can watch it on YouTube. I think it's Sunday morning, and then the rest of the games are on Spark, or I think they're delayed on 3, which is cool. All the Eels and Panthers players aren't playing, so it's just the rest of the squad getting a bit of a run around. Shane's Nickel Clockstead's at fullback, which is good for him. But all of this is to set up the World Cup wildcard, where I've been thinking, like, the winner of this World Cup might not be the most talented team. In these situations, I think it, you know, having a group like this, because everyone's fantasizing about what a strongest possible Kiwis team is, or what a strongest possible, like, Samoan team or Tongan team. If you're rolling through a tournament, someone's going to get injured. Someone's definitely going to get suspended. Someone's going to get concussed. And we're not doing so in none of the Tua Tagovailoa concussion medical practices here. Like, if you're concussed, you're going to be out. And all of that shit's going to happen in a tournament, as well as the fact that this tournament, the World Cup, is starting like 2 weeks after the grand final. So a bunch of players are right. Like, that's why the Panthers and Eels aren't in England right yet. Like, for the players for Aotearoa, they might still be in Sydney and then flying over, you know, in the next couple of days. So you can do all the fantasizing you want about possible teams and different combinations, and we're going to have, you know, Britton Nakora plays on the right edge for the Sharks. Is he going to play left edge or right edge for the Kiwis? Like, all that shit's going to be happening. But the team who wins the most games, they're going to have the best depth, because players are going to get injured, players are going to be missing. Let alone performance. Like, for some reason this just sticks in my head, like, respect to the Samoans, respect to the Usuls, while Tonga was rising up as a force in rugby league, Samoa Rugby Union and Samoan Rugby League had dramas at multiple World Cups. Like, coaching staff taking money, players returning from a World Cup overweight because all they did was kick back and eat. Like, for whatever reason, that drama has followed Samoa. And yes, Tonga's had drama. Like, there's definitely been drama with Tonga after the 2017 World Cup. Like, as we know, politicians and officials are a bit greedy, and they keep a lot of the money to themselves. And some of the stuff the Tongan players were talking about didn't actually eventuate. But for some reason, in rugby league and rugby union, those dramas have happened for Samoa in at least two different World Cups. And that's just kind of a situation where it's like, yeah, you like, so much shit goes into a major tournament like this where it's never about who has the best players. Because you can go back to the last World Cup, Australia, they always have the best players. Like, they have the best player, Cameron Smith, a second best player, Billy Slater. Like, that's how the Australian team works. And yet the grand final against England was super niggly. It was like less than 10 points were scored or something crazy like that. And it just all gets chucked into this pot where this is a World Cup. The most talented team might not win, and the team who does win is going to have various options in every position. They're going to absorb wins and losses and availability the best, and they're going to come together and build towards a common goal, which is, these are all reasons for encouragement and optimism for the Kiwis, because they've been building for a long time now. And Michael Maguire keeps mentioning like 2019, and that was when Chance Nicol-Klokstad was selected at centre, and Michael Maguire literally like groomed him to play centre because he was playing fullback for the Raiders. World Cup 9s, he's playing centre, even though it's 9s, he's playing in the same position, and then he's starting centre for those end of year tests in 2019. And it feels like Michael Maguire's been building this group together for a long time. You look at the Australian squad, they haven't been building anything because they weren't doing anything. Like, at least Aotearoa's had a game against Tonga, and like, some of those combinations have been further established. And I wrote this in my squad yarn. That's why Isaac Liu's selected. That's why Watene Selesniak's selected. That's why Nicol-Klokstad's selected. That's why Jesse Bromwich is going to play a lot. Like, forget about form. It's about the players that Michael Maguire is building with and what he wants to do. So, fascinated by this World Cup, I definitely believe that reasons for excitement around the Aotearoa Kiwis, everyone's saying the talent, right? Like, everyone's saying Joey Manu, the forward pack, Brandon Smith, Dylan Brown, Jerome Hughes, like, everyone's pointing to the talent, whereas my excitement for Aotearoa Kiwis, as I've said in the variety show, if you compare it to 2017, this is a team that's actually like building together. They're actually moving forward together. They've created an environment that players want to be a part of. And that is the most exciting thing about the Aotearoa Kiwis heading into this World Cup, which when combined with good talent is pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, because you're talking about all the different the ways in which you have to challenge your depth at these kind of tournaments, because you absolutely do. Like, it's the other thing is there's games in relatively short space of time, so especially the early games, you're going to want to rotate some things anyway to keep guys fresher for later on, and you're going to have to be able to win those games if you rest so and so. You rest your starting front row as someone's got to come in and do the same job, hopefully against a weaker team, like you target the fixtures kind of thing, but you're still going to be able to do the job, you know. And one big factor in that specifically is Joey Manu, who you mentioned there, who's of course coming back from an injury that to the end of the season for the Roosters, like, should be good to go by the time it matters, but like, it takes one setback for that and then suddenly he's out for the tournament kind of thing. Like, that can happen pretty, like, that can just happen full stop. Even if he wasn't coming back from injury, that could just happen. He's had a couple untimely sort of like missing finals games in the last couple years with just, you know, getting injured at the wrong time. So a World Cup's kind of the same thing. So, I mean, like, I don't know, when squads are picked, it becomes less of a thing. Like, everyone's just got this squad that they've picked to work with. Australia have enough depth that they didn't see the need to pick the current Dally M champion. And did Dylan Edwards win the Clive Churchill in the grand final? I didn't watch the presentation afterwards, but he's not in the squad, so if he did, he didn't. That's pretty... Like, you've obviously got a fair bit of depth if you can go through that those kind of decisions, but I mean, you've got the squad that you picked. It's over in England, so it's hard to swap guys out if people get injured before then. I don't even know what the regulations about doing that is. So it's not like everyone has a crazy amount of players now to pick. It doesn't matter that Australia could pick 100 players who are good enough to play at this level. That doesn't matter. You've only got the squad that you take over. But all, I don't know, 26 or whatever the squad thing was, everyone there is going to have to do something valuable throughout the course of a tournament. Do you see that with the Kiwis, where it's like the full squad can handle if someone like Joey Manu goes down? Because what we're talking about here is not just like role player for role player or something. Like, if a star player goes down, do they have an? Because I don't know. Cameron Munster gets injured for Australia. Ben Hunt can easily slide into the halves or something like that. Like, they've got that kind of cover. I'm thinking specifically because the All Whites obviously missed Sarpreet Singh in recent times. Like, the Costa Rica game, the Australia games, didn't have a guy who could unpick a defense. Made a difference because young emerging team, and we've talked a lot about some of these other things, about like having to rely on inexperienced players to be like the role player type things. That's always a factor, but also you take out one of their top five players and they did not have anyone who could do that same job. Is that something you see with the Kiwis? Like, do they have the guys to where if a star player goes down, no dramas, next man up kind of thing?
Like, it's a bit of a drama for sure. But you can
some dramas, like, but next man up.
Some dramas, next man up. Like, so Shaun's Nickel Krogstad starting at fullback for this game because there's no Joey Manu. Nickel Krogstad is not Joey Manu. Nickel Krogstad could barely crack the Raiders' top 17, right, at centre or fullback for much of the season. But you put him in at fullback, it's okay. And I think what comes to mind is some of the Queensland Origin selections. Like, people have like thrown up all these forward pack combinations without Jesse Bromwich or Wadea Hargreaves. And that reminds me of Queensland when it was like, we're just going to keep selecting Nate Miles, because Nate Miles does the fucking job at the hardest level of this sport. And I think that is another element of the Kiwis selection. Like, Michael Maguire is sticking with blokes he know that can do a job. But if you roll through some of the positions, like, okay, Peter Hickey and Sebastian Chris are starting centres for this game against Leeds. One of them is injured, unavailable. You can put Maratanea Corey at centre. Okay, first choice halves combination, Dylan Brown, Jerome Hughes. They're not going to play every game together. Kieran Foran's going to play a few games. And, like, this is the funniest thing. Like, all the headlines in New Zealand are about Sean Johnson, and he's, like, the fourth, maybe fifth tier half from Aotearoa. There's no way he should be in the World Cup squad. Kieran Foran is way better than Sean Johnson right now. And that's the depth. Like, yeah, Dylan Brown and Jerome Hughes are fantastic, but give me a bit of Kieran Foran. Like, he knows what to do at test level. He's played a lot of test footy. The forward pack kind of speaks for itself. Like, I love Kenny Bromwich and Isaiah Papali'i. One of them's out, Britton Okoro's playing. Easy. Like, yeah, sure, Jesse Bromwich doesn't need to play every game. When he's not playing, you just roll through the middle four depth, and there's a lot of middle four depth there. The one area would be dummy half, where you got Brandon Smith starting. He's not going to start every game. None of these players are going to start every game. I'm fairly confident about that, because you're playing some weak nations. There's no point starting in everything we're saying again with the schedule, the traveling rigors, and all of that stuff. No one's going to start every game, I don't think. But it's like Jeremy Marshall King, I don't even think he needs to sit on the bench. Like, you might carry Kieran Foran on the bench to cover halves and hooker if Brandon Smith gets injured mid game. Because, like, Brandon Smith is he plays so hard that it's a high chance he might get injured. But you only need like two hookers, because Jeremy Marshall in a top strength team, Jeremy Marshall's not in the team. You might have Kieran Foran there, or you might just not give a fuck and just like at a pinch you might put Kenny Bromwich into hooker and bring on Nakora to the edge and work through some of those combinations. But that is the one area. But like, again, you only need, it's not like you need four hookers in a World Cup squad. Like, you don't need four to five halves in a World Cup squad. That's why Sean Johnson's not there. You only need a couple. And sure, you need to cover your bases, but that's why having Maratini Akori playing literally every fucking position is valuable. Nickel Klokstad, that's valuable as well. Isaac Liu can play middle and edge. You got a bunch of forwards who can play middle and edge as well. So that's part of the optimism, is that the Kiwis are well covered for a lot of these situations and circumstances that might appear. And if you think, like, what was Tonga's biggest weakness in the mid-season test? Talatau Mone was kicking from his 40-meter line every set, and the ball just went to Joey Manu every set. And it's like, okay, what happens if Talatau Mone gets injured? Who's playing in the halves? Then it's Isaiah Katoa, and Katoni Staggs isn't playing at this World Cup, I don't think, but like, Jason Tamalolo's in the halves or whatever, you know, like Samoa.
He might be
thing.
Able to do it, you know.
Oh, he can do it. He can fucking do everything. Samoa, same thing. What happens if there's an injury in the halves? Suddenly you're going from Jerome Luai and Chanel Harris-Tavita down to another player. I think the Kiwis are well poised for some of those situations that the World Cup will definitely throw up.
Well, looking at the draw, it's I mean, it's not too grueling, because it's not like one of those things. I wondered if like they'd have to play all three group stage games in the space of like a week and a half or 2 weeks or something like that. It's not. It's like there's a game every week for 5 weeks, basically, or six, I guess, if you make the, because there's, yeah, the group stage is four teams. We've got Lebanon, Jamaica, and Ireland. So there's no excuses for not finishing first in that group. But it also does kind of mean like, it's kind of
everyone's
like a soft
playing
introduction. Yeah, everyone's going to get games. And everyone's, if Joey playing. Manu's not ready for game one, no dramas. If he's not ready for game two, no dramas. If he's not ready for game three, a little bit of a drama, because you kind of want him to have at least one tune-up. But they should finish first in their group, and it's like very important to finish first, so you play a second place team from one of the other groups. The first knockout game, quarterfinals, is until the 4th of November, so that's, you know, it's a nice kind of introduction there. And then it's like, you know, quarterfinal 1 week, a week later semi-final, a week later final. Three potentially tough games in a row. Once you get to the knockouts, the group stage shouldn't be quite so grueling. As you say, everyone's going to get a game in that situation. And you can probably, you know, if you needed to try out some of those contingency plans, you could. Like, you could try an extra half or something like that, even if it's just like 30 minutes at the end of a game. You could figure out what your backup plan kind of thing is in those cases. It's, yeah, it's a good one, but it's one of those World Cups which is going to be like soft, 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 and then very difficult all of a sudden. Like, once you hit the knockouts, that's the real deal.
Let's roll through some of these other topics. Wildcard will might have to seek a bit of Shoshin growth improvement mindset and really challenge ourselves to stick with one idea at a time, or else we'll waffle on too much here. But we do have sneaky Black Caps cricket. They are playing a very random tri-series T20 series against Pakistan and Bangladesh. Obviously, Bangladesh and Pakistan will play each other as well. All games in Christchurch. Warm-ups for the T20 World Cup. As far as ranking this in the pantheon of October Aotearoa sporting matters, it's not very high on the agenda, because we are building to a T20 World Cup. But it is happening. What are you... like, what's one or two things, Wildcard, that you are looking for in this tri-series?
Well, the first one is, you said it's happening. This is the first thing I'm looking for, is whether it actually does happen. Because weather across the country not been great recently. And I think they're playing in Christchurch. And I did see a picture of the pitch. And it, I'm not sure, I couldn't tell because it was a grainy thing. But it was either that thing where you've got covers across the entire field, including all the outfield, or it was flooded. I'm not sure which.
I believe it has been snowing in Christchurch.
It's been snowing in Wellington, apparently, a little bit recently. So if Wellington's getting some, then Christchurch is probably... it's working its way up. I had to explain to an Englishman at football once that it doesn't snow here. He's like, cold before training sort of thing, shivering. He's like, oh, it feels like it's going to snow. And I'm like, have you ever seen snow here? How long have you lived here? 7 years? He's like, it doesn't snow this far. I lived in Auckland for 25 years and it never snowed. So I don't think it's going to snow in Whangarei. But if it ever does, it'll be now. And it certainly is not going to be nice for us. Of all the countries in the world to have to play the first game of this tri-series in, whether it's snowing or not, whether it's raining or not, it's going to be freezing in Christchurch. Bangladesh and Pakistan are maybe the two least suited to be able to do that. Like, of all the countries, that's going to be tough for them. My respects to those brave soldiers, you know. It'll be tricky. I also noticed that there's a fantastic new sponsor for a Black Cap series that they're hosting, and the sponsor is an overseas one. It's Bangladesh, which is, I think, a Bangladeshi detergent or something. Yeah, it is. But also, that's going to lead to some nice. It's going to lead to some nice headlines if Bangladesh struggle and lose all their games, and then you got the Bangladesh series. So those are nothing to do with Black Caps or setting things towards the 2020 World Cup, but maybe that's also a point, which is that unlike previous World Cups, I actually think they know what their best 11 is going into this tournament. I don't really know that there's anything to learn other than just getting some guys some reps, because it's been a month or two since they played 2020 cricket, which would have been in the West Indies. Played, two ODI series since then, and some guys probably had a little bit of a break. Get the reps in. That's important. Other than that, I kind of don't think there's anything to learn. I mean, the one thing maybe is is Fennell in first 11 opening, or is Devin Conway going to be opening? And it's the same thing as the Kiwis. At a World Cup, there might be opportunities for both to happen. And certainly in a warm-up game, if you're trying to figure that out, here's your opportunity. But I suspect Fennell is probably the backup batter, and they will prefer to have the bowling options and a wicketkeeper opening. It just gives you a bit more freedom. In which case, I think whichever way they go, they probably already know which way they're going. And so there's not really anything to learn from this series at all, other than maybe scouting out Bangladesh and Pakistan, who I assume we don't play at the World Cup. I'd have to check what the draw is, or else I don't know if we'd be playing them right now. But Pakistan are legitimately one of the two or three very best 2020 teams in the world, and even in Australia will be competing for that title. Maybe even especially in Australia, I actually think when you've got a decent pace bowling attack, that's something that might help them out as a subcontinent team rather than the usual of hindering them. And they have the best opening partnership in the world beyond any doubts, with Rizwan and Babar. Those two are just absolutely fantastic, and if you don't take an early wicket against them, you're in big trouble. There's really nothing to say about the Black Caps, though, is the thing. I really don't know what there is to gain, other than just the usual, it's warm-up games, get your reps in.
Fennellan feels a bit like Griffin Niami, Jordan Rickey, Matthew Tomoko, where they're like certified quality athletes and they're going to play for Aotearoa for a long time. But there is a pecking order, and there's this, you got to be better than the bloke ahead of you. So you'll definitely see him bat. You'll definitely see a bunch of combinations. You'll definitely see, I don't know what you'll see. I don't know what I'll see, because I don't know if I'll watch much of it. But you might see cricket played in snow in New Zealand, which would be pretty fun. The White Ferns are also playing at the moment. They just won their T20 series against West Indies this morning, but they got another game tomorrow. So plug that for the email tomorrow. We'll throw out some review stats there, which is good for them. But this series also wildcard will overlap, I think, with the start of the Plunkett Shield. And to put in perspective, my pecking order, Plunkett Shield is ahead of this random T20 tri-series, right? So that kind of tells you where my cricketing priorities lie right now. Hearty cricket fans will obviously be tuned in, but you're going to see a lot of, like, you're going to see Black Caps play Pakistan a few times, Bangladesh versus Pakistan a few times, Bangladesh versus the Black Caps a few times. Not sure you're going to see massive crowds. Like, it's a bit of a weird series, but it is a warm-up series. Happy days. This morning, Wildcard, you were watching Marko Stamenić in the Champions League. Any updated thoughts about Aotearoa's not the greatest Champions League export, but someone who's rising up those ranks? What did you think about his latest performance?
Well, the fella on the BT Sport commentary, I think it was the Summerbee dude, I can't remember. Robbie Savage was his co-commentator, which is always a strange experience listening to Robbie Savage gushing into a microphone. Didn't hear him say anything about Stamenić in particular, though, so unfortunate there. Did manage to shout at his son, who plays for Manchester United's reserve team, though, so he had his priorities in order. But the main commentator at one point talked about Stamenić. He obviously had, like, the nugget ready to go sort of thing. When you hear a commentator just roll out a stat and it's like, oh, he prepared this. Yeah, he's got this in his notebook. He was waiting for an opportunity to use this. And he talked about, you know, Winston Roofer got a shout out. He mentioned that Danny Hay apparently says that Stamenić has the ability to be one of New Zealand's best ever players, which, sure, yeah, he does. I guess that's news if you're an Englishman. But he also said that only three New Zealanders have played Champions League before, which is incorrect. Obviously didn't get his sources from the Niche Cash, because I would tell you there's five, I believe. Kim Wright, Winston Roofer, Danny Hay, Chris Killen, and Marko Stamenić. So Stamenić, with his second appearance, goes ahead of Danny Hay, who only made one. He goes level with Kim Wright, who had two. I think Chris Killen had about five, and Winston Roofer played, 10 games. He had a full season. Tied for the golden boot with Ronald Koeman. That's worth adding every single time that Winston Roofer comes up, because that's an unparalleled achievement. Stamenić, they were playing Manchester City. to put that out there, they're playing Manchester City, might be the best club team in the world right now. Either way, they're in incredible form, probably favourites for this Champions League. He got to meet Erling Haaland, got to watch Erling Haaland score two goals with, I mean, his first goal was with his first touch. That's just the crazy thing about Haaland, is he barely touches the ball, and yet he's the biggest presence on the field. It's so buzzy to watch that, because you know the defence is completely focused on everything he's doing. But he doesn't do that much. He's so economical with how he's a pure striker who knows, like, when do I make the late run? This is where I do it. Drop off, find the pockets of space, anticipate where the ball's going to go. And then he's also just, like, the biggest dude out there, like a striker who can bully defenders. And so he wins every header and holds up every ball. He's nuts.
Respectfully, Wildcard, I only care about Marko Siofatu Stamenić.
You've got the research nugget there going as well with the middle name.
I want to know how he's playing footy. Tell me how he's playing footy.
Well, their captain did his ACL on the weekend, who's their defensive midfielder. He's out for the whole season. Their other midfielder, who he started with alongside Stamenić, went off injured in the first half. So Stamenić, weirdly, was like the main man in midfield against a team that had 75% of possession. So you didn't actually see a whole lot of him. You watch him, you're just seeing him like making quick movements, close down a guy, but not too close, because he'll dribble past you, because it's Man City and everyone can dribble. You're also seeing him, you know, City switching the ball. He's got a
but
slide.
But is he doing a good job of that? Like,
he's doing an okay job of that. He did give away a penalty.
Ooh, I like that.
After last time where he had like 6 to 8 fouls or something like that, and got a yellow card, this time only one foul. But it was like arm barring Aymeric Laporte in the penalty area. Not from open play, so it wasn't one of those things where he got slippery in that case. It was like from a corner kick and across back post. He just sort of got the arm up. And I tweeted the gif of it. It was like experience versus inexperience. Because Stamenić didn't do a lot. He had the arm around the guy, but everyone's grabbing everybody in corner kicks. Like, you always, the difference is that Laporte fought through it. And Stamenić was just a little bit too You know, when the guy starts pushing through, just kind of leave him because he's not going to win the ball. He's obviously focused on getting through the tackle. He wants you to hold on so that he can fall over and drag you down with him and win the penalty. And that's what happened. And just one of those ones where it's like, welcome to the big time, fella. Like, everybody here not only is as good or better than you with their touch and their anticipation and whatever, it's also these guys are thinking three steps ahead because they've done this so many times. Like, this is your first big game of this level. Laporte's played 100 games of this level, probably more, and he knows how to turn that opportunity into a penalty. So that was, I saw a lot of that from Stamenich. I think the first half especially, his passing was a little bit frantic. Like, he didn't have a lot of opportunities to pass the ball, but when that's the case, you really just need to be accurate. And he, I think, like, 7 completed passes out of 15, or 8 out of 15, I think it was, in the first half. Did get better in the second half. I haven't seen the final stats because UEFA hasn't updated them yet at the time of recording, but like, a lot of these kind of things, it felt like, because also this was a big occasion for him in his career as a game, like as a milestone game. It was also a big occasion on an emotional level because his dad is a Manchester City fan, apparently. I've found that out this week. He mentioned that in an interview thing. His family also flew over. Like, his mum, his dad, I think his sister as well was there in the crowd. It was the first time they've seen him play professionally because he signed for Copenhagen amidst the pandemic. Like, there wasn't an opportunity to do this before. And this is the time that they've settled on, which is perfect because if your dad, like, Marcus Stamenich's dad being a Man City fan, and then the first game he gets to watch is his son playing against Man City in Manchester. Not so great with the weather. It looked a lot like Bangladesh versus Pakistan in cricket, that in Christchurch, that kind of weather. But, I mean, what an occasion. I think it was also probably because of that, though, quite an emotional one for Stamenich. So I think there were cases where you saw, like, maybe, not deer in the headlights, but it just a bit too self-aware of what he's doing.
That's a big occasion.
But, you know, that's how you go. You get through those ones early in your career and you're better the next time for it. That's the thing about experience versus inexperience, is that how do you get experience? By being inexperienced. Like, you have to start there, work through it, figure out these things. It's a big milestone for him, and I don't think it was his best performance, but I don't think you could say that about anybody in that Copenhagen team, because they lost 5-0, and it probably could have been a lot more if, you know, City subbed off Haaland at halftime. He could have scored 5 himself if they kept going. It's one of those ones. Tough mahi, but also...
Who else are they playing in the pool play?
Big learning curve.
Like, who's coming up?
Well, this is the halfway stage. They've now played every team once, and they play every team once again, and the opposite of whether it was home or away. So next week, guess what? Manchester City again. Do that one again, but in Copenhagen this time. So it might be a good opportunity for the family to actually stay over. You know, if you fly to Copenhagen afterwards, see him play on the weekend in a league game, and then see him play City on Wednesday. That'd be cool.
Also, a good measuring stick. You know, previous week against Man City, next week against Man City, how does he perform? Yeah. Any improvements? You can also gauge his performance, but we'll definitely be more intrigued when he plays when he can dominate one of the weaker teams in his pool.
Well, they are the weaker team in their pool, is the problem. Sevilla is the team he played last time, Champions League debut, and then the first game he was an unused sub against Borussia Dortmund, who...
Also shit.
Yeah,
Copenhagen for life. Marco Stamenich, big man thing. He's going to dominate the next few games. Football Ferns wildcard. They are also in action coming up. They are playing in Japan. And I saw there was they might be playing in the snow in Christchurch in a couple of weeks as well. That'll be fun for them. But they're playing against Japan. This is another... They're playing a lot of friendlies ahead of the World Cup, which is good to see. Japan also feels like one of these, like, I think the football fans have found a little groove where they've got suitable opponents. You know, where for a while we're talking about them playing USA, Canada, Sweden, and it was a bit tricky. What's the details for this game? When's it being played? And how are you feeling? Like, what's just the main vibe there with the football fans against Japan?
Yeah, 6:55 p.m. on Sunday evening over in Japan. Japan used to be one of those teams. Like, they've made World Cup finals. They might have even won one before, come to think of it, sort of, you know, 10, 15 years ago. The subsequent couple generations for Japan, not quite as good as that was, so they're not one of those like very best team in the world calibers anymore. They're probably still the best team in Asia though, so it's not an easy game. It's certainly one they'll be, especially in Japan, will be expected to lose, and maybe will lose. Like, this is the kind of opposition where they've got an opportunity if they play to their potential, kind of thing. Like, I don't think the difference is insurmountable the way it is if they play, you know, USA or whoever. But realistically, they're probably going to lose. If they do, I mean, I think they've bought themselves some wiggle room with the two wins last window against Philippines and Mexico. When you get those wins in the bag, you suddenly they're on a winning streak. It doesn't matter so much if you drop one to Japan in a difficult situation where it's like, as long as they continue to make progress, we continue to see ways in which they're trying to score goals, combinations forming, all these kind of things, that's all right. Like, I don't think we have to worry too much about the result here, because they've got that sort of monkey off the back of just like however many games had gone without scoring enough goals or winning enough games or whatever. Two wins in a row sets them up nicely. They are, as you say, they're playing South Korea, I think, in November after this. So that's November, the subsequent window, I would imagine. That's cool, because they beat South Korea not that long ago. It was an upset win. But also it was in South Korea, so they're coming to our turf this time. That is also a little bit more beneficial. And maybe they can get a win there as well. Who knows? But it's all part of the same progression of just trying to get in the best state possible for the World Cup. And there's some momentum after the last window. You know, getting two wins on the trot, that gives you a little bit of a running start into this series and the one coming up. And the fact is, they are, as you say, playing a lot of games, like filling out the calendar. It's what you want to see from them leading up to a home World Cup. It's how it's supposed to be, and continue on the journey, basically.
Is it the same squad from those Philippine-Mexico games?
It's probably slightly stronger. It's mostly the same team. A lot of the injuries and unavailabilities are still the case. You're not going to see Rhea Percival, obviously. Annalie Longo got injured in that tour. Abby Oseg is Trent Bolt, so she doesn't play friendly games, kind of thing. Which I wish they would... First of all, I wish they'd just be clear about it and just say, like, there's always, she's focusing on club commitments right now, blah blah blah, but don't really want to talk about it. Doesn't even get a mention in the squad announcement. All you got to do is just say she's just make that Trent Bolt comparison kind of thing, because you can hide behind the Black Caps. There's a precedent now, so you can just say this is how it goes. Which is fine as far as I'm concerned, as long as Trent Bolt and Abby Oseg both play the major tournaments and the biggest games, which both of them seem to still want to do, so no dramas. But, you know, Hannah Wilkinson didn't play those previous games because she got COVID on the tour. I think Malia Steinmetz was another one and Grace Jarley was another one. So they will have a little bit more. Katie Bowen is back available as well this time. She missed the last tour, but she's back for this one. And a few other players have just had good times at club level in between. And it is early season, so some of them were a little short on match fitness. That is increasingly getting better as games go on. So I think they are in a better place, but they're also playing a much better team, which is the trick. But, you know, as you say, the bottom line is I think this is a slightly stronger unit than we saw get wins last time, and that's a good place for the Ferns to be.
I'm going to give you, very generously, I'm going to give you a minute of National League, whatever the fuck you want to do. 3, 2, 1, go.
I don't know what I want to do with a National League minute. Well, let me check the fixtures. What do we got this weekend? So,
for some reason, 8 Mile rushing through my head, like, knees weak, arms are sweaty, bottom of my spaghetti. You got to step up and drop a National League freestyle here.
Good hype up.
I'll restart the clock, though. I'll restart the clock in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Righto, Saturday in the men's comp, we got Christchurch United against Napier City Rovers. Christchurch United lost their first game. Napier City had a nice, you know, sort of battling win over the Phoenix. I think that's actually quite a good game because those are two teams who I don't think are going to challenge for a title, but should give a good gauge of where they're both at, particularly Christchurch United at home wanting to bounce back. Miramar versus Birkenhead will be a it's an interesting one because Birkenhead beat Christchurch United, but I think Birkenhead are very good. So this was also like, if Miramar don't have Hamish Watson again, they might have some troubles there despite being at home. But if they do have Hamish Watson, you can beat any team on their day. Auckland City versus Kashmir Tech will be a great game because Kashmir Tech had a big win over Miramar last time, and Auckland City are Auckland City. Sunday, you got Phoenix and Auckland United. Just straight up some of the best young players in the country on both teams there to watch out for. And then Melville at home against Wellington Olympic. Olympic almost beat City last week, so they're a good team. They'll have designs on winning the whole thing. Melville in Waikato is going to be a lot of fun. There should be a good atmosphere from that because I think you'll get a decent home crowd there. Even if it's not big in numbers, it'll be loud and sort of decibels. Women's comp, you got three games on Saturday. Northern Rovers against Eastern Suburbs will be an absolute fizzer. Like, this is game of the round across all of these things. Rovers have 7 points from three games. Suburbs have won all three games, scoring like 16 goals. Rovers just won 9-0. Actually, both these teams have played Central in the last 2 weeks. Eastern Suburbs beat them 8-0, and then Rovers beat them 9-0. So goals galore between these two. That'll be a great game. Springs against Capital. Expect Springs to probably roll them. Southern against Central. Southern won last week against Capital. They'll have a pretty decent chance here of a going back-to-back with victories, although Central probably will feel a little bit relieved after shipping 17 goals to Rovers and Eastern Suburbs. Be pretty relieved to not be playing an Auckland team this week. And then on Sunday, you got Auckland United, Canterbury Pride. Canterbury Pride lost to Springs weeks ago, lost to Suburbs last week. It's their third game in a row against an Auckland team. They are the one Federation team you think are probably like in contention to be able to challenge the Auckland teams. If they lose three in a row, I don't think they're going to come back and make the final. So big game from them. And Auckland United, maybe just a little bit vulnerable at the moment because a couple players are at the Under-17 World Cup who they had actually relied on quite a bit. Four players, actually. So maybe this is a good opportunity for the Pride to get a win on the road. I think that was probably more than a minute, but there you go. There's a quick fire preview of all nine games coming up.
2.5 minutes, but I like it.
But I covered both leagues, so we can half it.
Yep, that's fair enough. Where's that the Wellington Phoenix Auckland game? Is that in Wellington?
That is in Wellington, and it is a which Auckland team was it? Was it Auckland United, wasn't it? That is a precursor to the Wellington Phoenix's game, the senior A-League opener on Sunday. So I would assume they'll both be on TV. Which I don't actually like. I'm not a big fan of, like, on the one hand, when the games are on Sky in the National League, you get better coverage, better quality sort of thing. You get probably more viewership and all that and more exposure. That's cool. On the other hand, really hard for me to get screenshots and GIFs and video clips and stuff like that, which is really annoying for writing about it. And even just to watch replays is way more difficult than the YouTube games. But yeah, that is a Wellington Phoenix doubleheader on Sunday. So if you are going to the game, get there early and watch both of them.
Wellington Phoenix are playing against Adelaide United on the Sunday wildcard, and we also have the Aotearoa Breakers. They have started their A-League season, so we've got a bit of breaknicks in our lives, which is good to see. Breakers were decent in their first game. I like the good to see Liafa getting some game time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like what he does. And the other guard, McDowell White, he's pretty good. There was one of the American imports. It might have been the guy with the long hair. He's not very good. every time he touched the ball, he turned it over. But I'm still learning there with the Breakers. Obviously, you laid out some Wellington Phoenix hype and optimism in the variety show, which was good. As far as viewing them together, the Breakers, they seem a bit behind the Phoenix. I think the Breakers and Warriors are a few notches below where the Phoenix are right now. Was there enough from that first up game wildcard to get you a bit excited about the Breakers? Because it's been a tough few years, but as we've talked a lot about, returning to Aotearoa is immense for these teams. And I saw something recently where the Toronto Raptors were judged to have the best home fans or the best home advantage. And What do you know? The season where they were based in Tampa Bay, they weren't very good. And it's the same with the Warriors, Breakers, and Phoenix. Like, there was no home advantage for any of their mahi previously, as we've talked about ad nauseum. So the Breakers revert to normal. Phoenix are back to normal. Happy days. Breakers were solid in their first up game. Were there any signs of life there that got you intrigued?
Depends what you mean by intrigued. I'm definitely not fizzing out over the Breakers losing another game. I thought maybe that was an opportunity, just the way that game played out. You know, Shea Ely didn't play for Melbourne. Suddenly made a big difference. Also, disappointing just from watching it. I like watching Shea Ely play. He's the most enjoyable Kiwi basketballer in that league, and the best as well. But they were competitive against a good team, so I do think that's positive. They also lost, and they had plenty of games last year, especially at the start of the season before everything just got depressing, where it was like they were competitive and they lost. So in a way, I'm not sure that much has changed. But I do get better vibes about them with Modi Mayor as coach rather than Dan Shamir. I think Dan Shamir was not a wartime general. He's not a Rakat merchant the way that Modi Mayor is. And then maybe this team, when they've been in a bit of a down buzz for the last couple of years, you kind of need that big personality of a coach to bring it out of you. So I do get, and just I think their recruitment and those kind of ideals was just better this year than it has been. Except for that Brantley guy, as you mentioned. I think it's Brantley who you were saying. 3 turnovers and 5 personal fouls in 23 minutes. So he missed both his 3-point attempts. 6 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists is okay. I think he's actually there as a injury replacement, though, I think. Not sure. I can't remember. The other two imports look decent, though. And they did definitely lead the way. Like, they were relying a lot on those two guys down the stretch.
Pardon and
Brown Jr. Pardon as me? Well. Yep. they were solid. They played big minutes. They were the key guys. That's pretty handy. I will note that the French next star fella that they had, Ryan Rupert, played a shade under 12 minutes and was a minus 15 on his plus minus. So, notice. Just normal next-star areas for the Breakers.
Yeah, let's keep track of this. Who are the guys from last season?
Returning players? I don't even know if you can count.
No, who are the next-stars from last season?
Oh, the next-star last year.
Besson.
Yeah, Hugo Besson and Ousmane Dieng.
What are they up to?
Well, Dieng's playing for the Oklahoma City Thunder now, so because it's the Thunder and they're tanking, as they always do.
That's not a glowing endorsement if you've made the team where everyone can make the team. Hugo Besson, what's he up to?
Yeah, the Dieng will get good minutes and will get some nice stats, but for a team that's going to lose a lot. So it's not the best judgment of what he's up to. Besson is a weird one because he got drafted really late on, like right one of the last couple picks, might have even been the last pick, by the Milwaukee Bucks. But they didn't actually want him this year. He was like a draft and stash. We'll see what he's like in a couple years. And if he's good, we've got his rights. We'll bring him back over. Which I don't know how that works with the Breakers, because he didn't sign an NBA contract because of that. They just have his rights. He hasn't signed a contract. But I'm not sure which club he ended up with. But at one point, he was highly likely to sign with the team that just released Jani Wetzel. So... it's probably not a coincidence, but he is playing Euroball at the moment, I think is what's going on with him.
So at the moment, let's say the next thing is like a 2.5 out of 10.
It just depends what your priorities are, because these guys are gonna Dieng got drafted nice and high.
Yeah, but just keep it general. Like, we're having a bit of fun here. Who cares? Like, they aren't dominant forces. They're not monsters. They're not celebrated to be the big Donnies as they are when the Breakers sign them. Come through the Breakers. Most of them go into oblivion, never to be seen again.
Well, that's the thing. They don't. Like, a lot of them go to... Well, so one or two of them might have, but the guys have gone through the Breakers, got drafted. Like, even Hampton, he's bounced around a couple of teams, but he's playing NBA games. He's still in a good position. It's just that the time...
But he's not one of the best players in the NBA.
No, of course not. But the window they're at the Breakers is, like, if that's your focus, it's bad because none of them help them win. They all turn up and then they play badly because they're 18, 19 years old. The Breakers might get a financial boost if a guy gets drafted high. Like, there's probably some compensation coming back their way, which is nice business. But it's not. It's also not a coincidence. These guys, like, this era of the Breakers focusing on these next stars has coincided with them being fucking terrible, like, just losing heaps of games. It's obviously not the only reason. There are several reasons, but they have not helped them win in any way. So if you're just looking at, like, where do those guys end up after going for the Breakers? A lot of them end up in pretty good places. Would they have gone there anyway if they hadn't gone to the Breakers? I think probably. In fact, I would suggest maybe some of them might have gone drafted a little bit higher if they'd gone to college or played G League or whatever, or even just stayed in Europe in one or two cases. I don't know that the Breakers have actually developed them into being better than they would have otherwise. So from the player's perspective, 2.5 out of 5 sounds fair. From the Breakers' perspective, these guys come here, don't do anything, make the team slightly worse, and then go on, and it looks cool when they get drafted and you get to tweet about them heaps, but they make the team worse for the time that they're there. So I'm still saying 2.5 out of 10 from the Breakers' perspective, but they love the marketing side of it, so for them it's a major success. If you care about winning basketball games, it's the opposite.
Wellington Phoenix wildcard. What is one thing to watch out for with the Wellington Phoenix in their first game of the A-League season against Adelaide United?
I think, well, there's a lot of stability at the back, which is nice. There's, I think Yugarkovic will probably start in the midfield, which should, alongside Clayton, oh no, Clayton Lewis is injured, isn't he? That's not ideal. But they should still have a decent enough midfield that they can rely upon. It's up front where it gets interesting, because there's been a lot of changeover. David Ball is still injured, so he won't be there. Ben Wayne is competing for a spot and did well in the FFA Cup game, so he's a chance, especially if Atelier wants to ease in some of his foreign imports. But there are three new players in those attacking spots on import visas. Jan Sass, the Brazilian sort of winger, likes to cut in and shoot a lot. Bozidar Krayev, who's a Bulgarian playmaker, nice and looks like quite an unselfish player. He's a bit sort of like lanky and awkward, but he's got good touch and is looking for a good pass. I think he'd more likely to play on the left. I can't remember his name, but the Polish fella up front as well. So Zawada, something like that. Oscar Zawada. I probably got that wrong. I haven't looked at the team. I haven't had long enough to get to know him yet. So, but he's sort of like the aerial threat target man up front. And you've got Costa Barbarousis has signed up front as well, who I think, from what I saw from him in those FFA Cup games and just like the player he is these days, I think is maybe low-key the best of all those signings, especially because he is a Kiwi player. Like, he's not going against your import thing, so been able to sign all these other guys, but a lot of new players to integrate into those attacking areas, and a lot of them are either more experienced in the case of Costa, or even in those the imports that they've signed are sort of like, they're not 32, 33-year-old veterans. They're 24, 25, 26-year-old sort of coming into the best part of their career things. They are guys who are leaving, you know, European excursions or whatever to move to Australia. So maybe they're at a certain phase in their career, but they're guys who have played in big games and know what they're doing. Replacing, say, up-and-comers like Reno Piscopo, who always looked good, didn't score anywhere near enough goals or assists or whatever, or Gary Hooper, who was, you know, fully experienced but always injured, so what are you going to do if a guy's not available? That's a lot of work for Talai to do in terms of integrating all these new attackers, but also it's been a clear focus, so you gotta sit back and see, like, well, how does it look? And it's not going to be something that clicks from week one. It will take time. It always does take time. But they've had a decent preseason together, and he's been fairly cautious. I do wonder if we will see Ben Wayne getting that start just to sort of ease them in, as I say. But that's definitely the focus, because it has been a problem of the Phoenixes, like when they've lost playoff games in the last few years, not being able to convert their chances and just not having that attack and impetus when it mattered the most. And that's 100% what the offseason has focused on. Using like three import signings all in those attacking spots, that's without a doubt what they're going for. Four, if you include David Ball, who's also on an import contract. Like, four of their things are in the front four. Like, they could name their two tens and their two nines all imports. You'd have to drop Costa to do that, which I don't think they'd do, but still. And that also means, like, you're going to have 60 minutes gone in a game, you're 1-0 down, it's not clicking, you're going to have someone extremely good on the bench that you can throw on. You don't have to turn to an academy player. We're not going to Oscar Van Hattem. This is not fair on you, Oscar, but we expect you to go on now and do something amazing and win us this game. Or Ben Old or whoever. We're turning to, like, guys who some of them have played international football, you know. Costa Barbarousis or whoever, like 50 cap, all white. Those are the kind of players they're looking for, and that was 100% a priority of Talai's in the offseason, so now we see how that goes. Like, this is what you targeted? Well, how does it work? That's the focus.
If my antenna is correct, you don't have high hopes for the Breakers this season, so I won't ask you who will finish higher, the Phoenix or the Breakers, because obviously both in agreement the Phoenix will finish higher than the Breakers. Where do you predict the Wellington Phoenix to finish on the A-League ladder?
I think with the boost of home field advantage, I think they could go as high as third, which would equal their best ever thing.
Beauty.
I'm not locking it in, but that's my pick, my optimistic pick.
Beauty.
Top six for sure.
Happy
though.
Days. Do you want to take your prediction further? Top eight.
Well, no, the top six, because that means top six means you get a finals game. That's the point. I'm saying they will absolutely be playing some postseason footy. Hopefully a home game.
Next
if you
season,
finish third, I think you get a home game. So there you go.
Next season, I believe the Warriors will finish top 13.
Well, they finish top 13 every season, don't they? Consistency.
Yeah, sure. That's why it's funny. Alrighty. Happy days. That is
16th.
The niche cast. Big it up to yourself. Big up Aotearoa Sport. And big up Papatua Nuku and Ranganui for delivering us beautiful
Big week
weather.
For them.
Kia kaha, stay beautiful, mauri ora, raise your mana, cheer.